Thank you for inviting me. It's not the first time. I actually led a Shabbaton, probably before you were here and any of you were here, in a different building, but I was at Levitt Hurd and enjoyed it immensely and was excited to come back. Let me explain Spheros. How many of you have actually seen the book? Oh, wow, Baruch Hashem. You've probably read it more recently than I, and maybe understand it better. The idea of the book, as was introduced, the idea of what I'm doing here today, is to take something which is very complex, very Kabbalistic, almost left in the too hard pile for most people, ignored, well, that's Kabbalah, and to really bring it to a place which we can all grow from. That was very accurately portrayed. Just this morning, because I'm the sort of the Spherot guy, somebody sent me a video of some guy who was talking about Spheros and talking about how it is the most damaging thing that has ever happened to the Jewish people. I actually had a cheshek to bring my computer to show you this little video on YouTube, but then I decided, why should I give him another hit? You know, it's just what his argument was. I don't know who this guy was, but he was like doing it in rap. what he was saying was that the human mind has this need to understand God, and therefore they dissect him and cut him into pieces and give him personalities and give him flavor and try to put him in this place and that place, and that's what Spheros is. And it's a horrible thing because there is no understanding God, and we should just be humble and understand that we don't understand, and therefore the whole Spheros is wrong, and the whole Zohar is wrong, and the whole Ari is wrong, and he went on and on. He's an Orthodox guy. There's only one thing that's wrong, and that's him. He's completely wrong, and I actually couldn't resist the urge to write it in the comment of this video, that he completely missed the boat. He completely misunderstood what's going on over here. Spheros, which I will attempt to explain briefly, is not at all a description of Hashem. It has nothing to do with describing Hashem. In fact, the most basic limud, the very first thing that one has to know about Spheros, is that we don't understand Hashem. Simply put, is lemala min haSpheros. What Spheros is, that we can understand, is an attempt to understand two things. One is the creation, not Hashem, but his creation, the world that we live in, and to understand, perhaps more importantly, what's our position, what are we doing here in this creation, what are we doing here? And that meaningfulness of life, that understanding of creation, is not just besides the fact that he's wrong, it's not just a Kabbalistic point that can be put on the side. It's actually has to do with every single word we say and every single walk we walk and every single place we go and every decision that we make. And I'll explain to you how that works. First of all, let me give this introduction. I'm not a great Kabbalist. However, I have gotten through probably the first 20 pages of every Kabbalah Sefer that's out there. And they all, very interesting, the Zohar, the Ramchal, the Arizal, the Shari Ora, Reb Chaim Vital, the Tanya, all Hasidic Sfarim, the Hakdama of the Sfas Emes, they all, the Kabbalah Sfarim, meaning the Kabbalists, are interested in one thing. Basically one thing, and this is what they all write, the Shari Chesed, which is a beautiful Hakdama of Reb Chaim Vital on the Kisvei of the Arizal. They want to know, why did Hashem create the world? Now, that's a big question, because nobody could actually ask him why he created the world, but we do have a Torah, and we did have Har Sinai, and we do have different drachim in the Masorah to be able to understand things which actually came through Nevuah, through prophecy from Hashem to us. Hashem has spoken to men. So the Kabbalists want to know, Hashem, why did you create the world? That's the, I would say, the first chapter of just about every Sefer Kabbalah. If you have them here, try it out, open it up, you'll see this is what they're all talking about. More important than that is they all gave the same answer. Each one in his own way. And the answer is because Hashem wanted to make, and let's try to absorb this because I believe this is something that we can understand and do something about. The answer is that Hashem wanted to make for himself, kivyachol, a dira b'tachton. He wanted to be available, present, accessible in this world. Why? So we really don't know why 100%. I mean, why? Go know why. But this is what the Arizal says. And from here I'll explain how the spheros pertain and try to bring this to a very practical point. The Arizal says, he gives an example. I'm going to reword the example in a way that I could understand it better and hopefully you could understand it better. But this is basically the example. Let's say a person comes into like lots of money. $10 million. You have $10 million. And you decide correctly that I want to give a good part of this to charity. So this is a wonderful thing. A person wants to give, let's say, $1 million to tzedakah. So what does he do? Well, first thing he does is he speaks to his lawyer. The lawyer says, you know, don't just give away money. You have to create a foundation. You can't just make a foundation. Foundation needs a board. You can't just have a board. You have to have a qualifications committee, and you have to have submissions. And here's this guy sitting with $1 million wanting to give it away. And there's one bureaucracy after another, one legal aspect after another, which is telling him, his tax lawyers are telling him maybe he should give it out little by little. And maybe a half a year goes by, and a year goes by, and this fellow, with all good intentions, has not yet given tzedakah. Meaning, with all the right ideas and with all the right intentions, he's still sitting on his $1 million. And none of it has gone into the actual hands of an ani. So what you have here is the beginning of tzedakah. You have the beginning of a very righteous and beautiful thought. What a wonderful thought. You want to give $1 million. We all want to get close to him. You know, all the people that are helping other people are trying to call him. But the fact of the matter is, this has never come to fruition. It's never actually articulated in an action. It's never come, in Kabbalistic words, into the world of asiya, or in our world, in our words, into the world of ma'aseh. It's never actually been done. So what you have is possibly a wonderful feeling in your lave, this Baal Tzedakah. He probably has a beautiful machshava pattern. He's actually done things to get him through. So he's had machshava, dibur, ma'aseh, but not the full ma'aseh, because there's never been an ani that has actually benefited from this person's tzedakah. Everybody understands that, okay, you're almost there. If the guy dies before a penny goes away, he has never given tzedakah from this $1 million while he was alive. What happens afterwards? More bureaucracy and more arguments. Says the Arizal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in creating the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously, you don't need me to tell you that we have no understanding in something which is infinite. Infinite, infinity, Ein Sof, is beyond our comprehension, period. But what we do know, the little bit that we do know, is that Olam Chesed Yibana, that Hashem has all the greatest midos that can possibly be imagined. But all of those midos, as long as they're with Hashem, as long as they haven't been actualized, then they're incomplete midos. They're like the rich guy who started the foundation but never actually gave away the money. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs, says the Arizal, this is amazing because how can we attribute need to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's what he says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs an actual place, an actual world. He needs us to be recipients. In other words, the midos of Hashem are completely spiritual. And if not for this world, they would remain spiritual And as much as they might be given to malachim and they might be given to neshamas, if they don't get right down here to Manhattan or to Yerushalayim or to Beit Shemesh, as long as they don't touch ground, then they haven't been actualized and the midah is not complete. The midah is not complete. Says the Arizal, why did Hashem make the world? And this is basically what the Ramchal says or what everybody, why did Hashem make the world? To make the world complete. To make himself, Kiilu, Kavyachal, complete. To make his midos complete. This is called the completion of this midah, this circle, into the world, is called Malchus. Anybody who's been reading the Sefer or knows something about this knows that Malchus is always the end of every single one of the Spheros. The spheros that we can understand is Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod. Everybody's seen the charts. Yesod, Malchus. Malchus is where God touches ground. Malchus is when this world becomes Hashem's world. V'hoya Hashem lemelech al kol ha'aretz. V'yom ha'hu yashechad u'shmo echad. When Hashem is the melech, what does it mean to be a melech? We all know the rule. Ein melech below am. You can't be a king if you don't have a following. So Hashem Kilu needs the world in order for him to be considered a melech. Ein melech below am. When it touches ground, then you have v'haya Hashem lemelech. Then he finally becomes a melech. Al kol ha'aretz, that's the world that we live in. And by yom ahu, what will happen here? Listen to the words. Hashem echad. Hashem in Shamayim, wherever he is, whatever he is, what we don't understand, that's one. We know that's one. Ushmo Echad and all the manifestations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the world as we know it, that's the Shem Hashem. That's also Echad and it's all united. So what we're looking for is the Tachlis, the goal of Sfiros HaOmer, the goal of the world, the goal of Sfiros is all to reach this place of Malchus. I'm going to dwell on Malchus because that's the goal. If we could talk here every day, we would talk about every single one of the Midos, but I was only invited once, so I'm going to get right to the point, and that's Malchus, and just explain the following, that the creation is, again, something which is very difficult for, if at all possible, for us to understand. Not only rabbis have tried to understand it, but physicists have tried to understand it. At the end of the day, everyone gets stuck on this ex nihilo thing. You know, like it's yesh me'ayim. Whatever anybody out there believes, at some point, nothing has to come to something. Infinity has to become finite. How could you fit infinity into this world? The answer is, we don't know. But what we do know is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took part of what was going on there in Shemayim, and he said, let's make a world, and he took different midos of himself, and he brought it into the world. So the world needs a little bit of chesed. The first thing is chesed. Chesed is to give. I can't make a world unless I'm giving. Hold on. Chesed, if I'm making chesed, I'm giving. I'm giving water, then there's water all over the place, and nobody can walk on land, and you have a tsunami. So I need to make gevura. I have to make this miracle, Hashem says, where the water somehow miraculously, under normal circumstances, stops when it hits the beach. Otherwise, we would all drown. So that's the gevura. Gevura is the limits, the boundaries of chesed. All of us have to do this. We have to do chesed. If we're acting like Hashem, we have to do chesed. We have to be givers. But then we have to know where the boundaries of our giving is, because giving can also bring us to a place where we don't want to go. When Hashem has in the world, like I've got something, it's like a recipe, building blocks. I'm going to create this world with chesed. I'm going to now put some gevura to retain the chesed. And when I mix the two together, I'm going to have tiferes. Tiferes is a beautiful thing. Tiferes is harmony. Harmony means that two things that are different can work together. It's a beautiful thing, harmony, yeah? I always give this example that if I'm talking, let's say, and then somebody else in the back would be talking, so it would be very annoying. to me for sure, maybe even to you, because then you can't hear nothing, you know. And let's say two people are talking at the same time. Let's say three people are talking at the same time. It's even more annoying. Let's say five people are talking, even more annoying. Let's say 50 people talking at the same time. Impossible. Politano feels like Shul already, like everybody's talking at the same time. Can't be, right? So that's disharmony. Let's say instead of you in the back talking while I'm talking, let's say I'd start a niggin, and I'd start singing, and you start singing with me. So would that be annoying? It'd be beautiful, no? Now let's say another person would join in and even harmonize a little bit. Be even more beautiful. Let's say all 50 people here would start singing together. It would be the most beautiful thing in the world. Say, let's get the tape recorder. Let's get the video machine. This is gorgeous, right? So there's a difference between talking and singing. Talking is all about me wanting to be heard. Singing, it shouldn't be about me wanting to sing. It's about bringing a niggin into the world. Singing brings us all together. And since it brings us all together, you have harmony. So harmony is a beautiful thing. Harmony is where two different and opposing and dafka different kinds. The beauty of a philharmonic orchestra is that they're all different. You know, if you have 150 violins playing exactly the same thing, it wouldn't be, all it would be is loud. But you have different things, harmony, different instruments, different things. That's the harmony of Tiferes. That is called Tiferes when Chesed and Gevurah can work together. We can, if we have a little bit of time, we can give a lot of examples of where we find Chesed and Gevurah working together in this world, both in the halachic world, in the Jewish world, and in the world of nature. Netzach and Hod are different mitos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more building blocks. How do we make this last? How do we make this beautiful? Netzach means to last. Hod means to be beautiful. You see, everything, remember, is starting with infinity. Infinity ain't so. Infinity, when it comes into this world, can be turned into eternity. So infinity and eternity are two ends of our life. We're given infinity, we turn it into Netzach. And along the way, we make it beautiful. That's hope. Yisod is where we start taking all these midos, and Hashem takes all these midos in the creation and brings them down to earth. This is actually how, this is the pipeline of everything, all godliness brought into earth. And then we have Malchus. Malchus is when you take that beautiful seed that we've just created and you plant it into the ground and it sprouts. Now it's not coming from Hashem any longer, but it's coming from the world. This is the Malchus where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midos has come, like that rich guy who wanted to give tzedakah. It's come all the way to the end. It's come all the way to the recipient. It's become part of the world. Once there's Malchus forever. The Ramchal teaches the following. This is very, it's really a life-changing, life-altering teaching, the Ramchal says in Derech Hashem. There's a Ramchal that, whether we know it or we don't know it, or whether we see it or we don't see it, there are many worlds out there. He identifies four. There's a world which is completely like Hashem, you know, Atzilus. There's a world of Bria that's like a world of neshamas. We don't really see that world. We know we have neshama, but we don't see like the world of neshamas, the world of Kisei HaKavod. These are things we read about. They're not things that we know about. There's the world of Yetzira, says the Ramchal. That's a world of Malachim. And then there's our world. That's the world that we see, Asiya, the world of touch and feel, the world where, there's houses and there's cars and there's friends and there's people. And there's good things that happen and bad things that happen. That's the world that we know the best. If you're a scientist, you know it really, really well. If you're a psychologist, you understand a part of it very, very well. If you're a doctor, you understand another. Medical doctor, you understand another part of it very well. An economist understands another part of it. What we're all familiar with is the world of Asiya. The world of, if you go one world up, we'll take the Ramchal's word for it. So there's a whole different world that we don't see, and that's a world which is all about Malachim. Malachim. Anybody know how many Malachim are there? Anybody know? Anybody hear of any Malachim? I can't hear you. Why? God is unlimited. okay, that's a good point. Wait, but they have names. Like if you go through Tanakh, what? Right, those are actually, okay, Michoel, like that. Gabriel. Very good. Four? How many? Who do you have? Something like he's saying, right, that it's an infinite because of the mitzvahs. But that malach is, I don't know if this is important, but since two people mentioned it, I'll explain. That malach is there for a second. They're not ongoing malachim. I'll explain what malachim are, and that'll be helpful to us. There are that we can name 762 malachim, meaning, you know, about Raphael, Gabriel, Uriel. But there are 700. How do I know this? I did not count Malachim anywhere. But there's Reuven Margolius, Olav Shalom, wrote an encyclopedia of Malachim. Believe it or not, there's such a sefer where he went through Tanakh and Shas and Zohar and every sefer he could find and found every Malach. And his little encyclopedia describes what that Malach does. So there's 762. Entries here, assuming that he was right, for 762 malachim. There's a whole world of malachim which we don't, you know, we don't know what to do. What are they doing? I mean, just in general, what's the job of the malachim? The job of the malachim is to do. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The malachim, they're only actions. It's what those actions leave behind is what really matters behind it. Like, correct. The action's only temporary, but what comes afterwards?
Exactly. My point exactly. Meaning. Perfect. Meaning that these malachim are basically, what does a malach mean? A malach is a shaliach. That's what the word means. A messenger of Hashem. They're busy bees. You know, they're Hashem has to get things done. He chose not to do himself. He chose to have malachim do it. Those malachim all live in the world of Yetzirah. Meaning, whatever needs to be done. People need to be created. Energy, astrology, astrological systems, as an example. All of the mazolos, that's from the world of Yetzirah. One on top of us, that's all busy with malachim. Malachim are moving the stars and Jupiter and Mars and making the first house and the second house and all kinds of problems and good things in the mazolos. In mazol Yisrael, we go a little bit higher than that, to higher worlds. The point I'm making is that malachim are working for Hashem. They have no other purpose. As soon as they have one purpose, and that's to work for Hashem. Everybody understands that, right? Whatever they are, whatever they look like, I doubt that they have wings and they're flying, or I don't think that's what a malach. I don't think it's anything like that we could understand humanly. Whatever they are, everybody understands, workers of Hashem. Right? Does everybody agree with me? And they're meant to do something, and when they do that thing, it's as you say, it's what they've left behind, it's what they've accomplished. So that's the malachim, the world of malachim, keeping the world working. Let's say under the hood, you know, or behind the scenes, there's all these malachim making things happening. We as Jews, it's a very difficult thing because if you know about malachim, you have a tendency to want to like even pray to the malachim. So you're not allowed to pray to the malachim. Why? Because it would seem like a good idea because, you know, you're in charge of death. Malach HaMavis, like, let me talk to you a little bit. You're in charge of birth, let me talk to you a little bit. You're in charge of refuah, boy, do I want to talk to you. If you're in charge of making people healthy, healing people. We don't talk to Malachim because we can go higher, we can talk to Hashem. That's why we don't talk to Malachim. Here's the thing. Says the Ramchal that in the world above us, which I'm very unconcerned about, there are malachim. In this world, which I am very concerned about, because I live here, in the world that we live in this room, there's no malachim, there's people. There's you, there's me, and there's the people outside. There's good people, there's bad people. Here's a lashon of the Ramchal. Ein bein malachim lebnei adam, there's really no difference between malachim and bnei adam, really same thing. Malachim are meant to do Hashem's will and make sure everything's going up. You know, so they're up there in Shemayim with the mops and the hoses and making sure everything's good. And bnei adam, us, are meant to do Hashem's will. So ein bein malachim lebnei adam, ella, except for this. Lemalachim, says the Ramchal, Ein bechira chashis. Malachim have no choice. This is their job. They're programmed. They're like a computer, like robots. This is what you do. They can't decide to do something else. They can't say, no, I'm going to the beach today. They can't do it. First of all, where are they going to find a beach? Second of all, they don't have that. They don't have that capacity that we have to choose that I want to do this and I don't want to do that. We have that capacity. So we're the same as Malachim, says the Ramchal. What does that mean? What are we the same? Just like Malachim have to do their job for Hashem, for the world, in their world, and I presume the same is true on a higher world and on a higher world, we are the Malachim of this world. We are the Malachim of this world. Here's a Gemara there, based on a pasuk. Im rabcha dome lemalach Hashem tzvakos tevakesh Torah mipi. When you find a Rebbe, not an easy thing to do to find a Rebbe, but it's something we all have to do. Thank God you're here in a yeshiva with good Rebbeim, but it's difficult to find a Rebbe who understands me, who I can understand him, who can guide me through life, who can teach me Torah, who can help me make good decisions. What do Chazal want you to look for when you're looking for a Rebbe? Look for a real smart guy, maybe a genius. Look for somebody who has a good degree that he can understand where I'm coming from. Look for somebody maybe who's got a bad, you know, was off the derech a little bit at one time so that he could feel more for me. Like, what are we looking for? Says the Gemara, Rab Chadoyme Lamalach Hashem Tzevakos. It's got to be a Malach. Okay, that's a difficult. that's difficult, right? There's Rabbeim in the room. I mean, they are like Malachim. I know some of them, right? Malachim, but I mean, a Malach, that's a lot. What does it mean, a Malach? A Malach has one job and one job only. There's no personal agenda. There's no thinking, maybe I want to do good for you, but maybe I'll give you some advice which is good for me this time, or good for the world, but not really good for you. That's not Malach behavior. Malach behavior is that you're doing simply the right thing. If your Rebbe has got one thing in mind, which is me and the Malchus Hashem, then I'm going to learn from him. As soon as there's an agenda, I'm out of here. I'll learn from you, but you're not going to be my Rebbe. My Rebbe has to be 100% pure. Has to be a Malach. That's the language. The language of the Torah is a Malach. No agendas. One job. No Bechira Chafshis. That's how we have to see our Rebbe. Hard to find a Rebbe. Hard to find a Rebbe. But there are. Baruch Hashem, there are. And that's something that we should all do. We're in the world. We are the Malachim in this world. We're the busy bees of the world. We have a job to do. Difference is, we have free choice, says the Ramchal, meaning we could choose not to do that job, yeah? Many people choose not to do the job. Most people choose not to do the job. Most people don't even know they have a job. But the fact is that we know that we're here for a purpose. Comes the Arizal back today. Arizal is discussing why Hashem made the world, and why did he make us? He made the world so that he should have a dira b'tachton, that his chesed should come all the way to actualization. He made us to actualize that. That's our job. So our job, you know, like Atem Edai, Yeshayahu said. Like, if you're Jewish, particularly if you're Jewish, this is true of all human beings, by the way, but if you're Jewish, then for all those people that say, I don't know, you know, who God is, I don't know what Hashem is, I don't know what he wants, so Yeshayahu told the people in his times, and it became a prophecy for all times, Atem Edai, if you want to know what it means to be Jewish, you're the ones who are bearing testimony of Hashem. If somebody wants to know me, Hashem says, they can't look at me, but they can look at you. And if they look at you, they have to be able to see what Hashem is. Otherwise, you're not being a Malach. You're not doing your job. You're not doing what you were created to do. So it's a changes everything. I want to talk a little bit about, bring it from the esoteric to something very, very practical, of making malchus in this world. Once we understand that we are malachim for this purpose, For this we were created. And everything, we can choose otherwise, but every time we do choose otherwise, we're just basically getting on a tangent. We're not doing our job. We have a job, do the job. The job is to make malchus. Here's what I've been thinking a lot about lately. The Torah says here's a basic mitzvah. V'yahavtas Hashem alekecha b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshecha u'b'chol miyodecha. You should love Hashem. Love Hashem with everything you've got. Says the Gemara in Yuma, Pevav, how do you love Hashem? It's about kissing the Sefer Torah. Yes, but that's not a yet. It doesn't yet show love. How do you love Hashem? Says the Gemara in Yuma that you know how you love Hashem? A person has to be one, Sheshem Shamayim, Misa Hev Al Yodecha. Shem Shemayim becomes beloved because of you. Now listen to what we're saying. It's a very deep thing. It means that when I'm here in this world as a malach, trying to build the end of the Sviros campaign, which is Malchus, the way that I can build Malchus is by getting people to understand this is Hashem's world. Now, how do you get people to understand this is Hashem's world? So there could be a lot of ways. You can write a book about Hashem, a theology book that could help. You can create a seminar, maybe like a discovery seminar where you can prove Hashem. There's 5 proofs of God, 9 proofs of God. You could do that. But the Gemara says there's, for the rest of us, there's a very simple thing that you can do. You can be a kind of a person that when people look at you, they say, oh, that's what Hashem is. Meaning, there's a person who is a Jew, Atem Edai, seems to be keeping Judaism. He's just like a wonderful human being. Wonderful. You can trust him. He's not arrogant. He or she is not agenda-oriented. It's just like wonderful people. I was talking to somebody who, a non-Jew, just a couple of days ago, at the Fellowship of America, and she was telling me that, she's talking about a certain person that's a Jewish person that's sick, and she asked if the Jewish community can pray for this person. So I said, okay, who is it? She got my number on the internet. She called me, can I organize to pray for this person? She didn't think it was appropriate to pray in church for a Jew. Pray for him in a synagogue. So I said to her, first of all, you should pray for him in church too. Everybody should pray for him. But she started to describe the person to me. She was like, he says such good manners, and he's always respectful to other people, and he's honest, and he gives me all the a whole list of wonderful things. She said, is there a word for that, like in Jewish? So I said, it's a tzaddik. All of those things are a tzaddik. There's a person who's acting. I told her, this is a person, a Jew who's acting like a Jew. That's what I explained to her. And you know what she was saying? It was Shem Shemayim was Misahev Al Yado. She wanted to come meet me. She said, come to Israel. She wanted to find out more about Judaism because she met or she knew this person, and this person was just a charming, wonderful human being. I remember I used to live in Australia years ago. I had a kolel in Australia. And there in Australia, there was a person who, there was a Baal Tshuva. So I always like to ask Baal Tshuva, how'd you become a Baal Tshuva? what brought you to become Baal Tshuva? I studied this. Very interested in what would make a person become a Baal Tshuva. And I always think to myself, if I wasn't from, not that I'm so from, but if I wasn't from, who would be able to make me into a Baal Tshuva? I wonder about this all the time. I'm trying to find that person. That's the Rebbe who's a Malach Hashem Tzvokos. I grew up this way, but looking for that. Anyways, I asked this person, had an interesting last name. His last name was Zipper. Easy to remember. So So I asked him, Tony Zipper, I said to him, why'd you become Baal Teshuva? So he says, I'll tell you, there's a story. He said he was completely non-religious, nothing to do with Judaism, nothing to do, wasn't thinking about God, wasn't thinking about anything. But he was invited to a bris at the Kollel, where I taught, in Australia. And he came to the bris, that's all. He just came to the bris, like to have lox and bagels and be at the bris. And when he got home, it wasn't a particularly inspiring experience, as he said to me, with the bris, you know. So he went to the bris, he came home, and when he got home, he realized, later that night, he realized that he didn't have his wallet. He realized that he forgot his wallet someplace, or he lost his wallet someplace, and he had a lot of stuff in the wallet. So he's going back through his day. Where was I? I was at this place, I was at that place, this place. So then he realized that he must have forgotten it. It was already like 10, 12 hours ago in the Kollel. So he gets in his car the next day, and he comes to the Kollel, and he goes into the room where the bris was, and sure enough, there on the table where he was eating his lox and bagels was the wallet. It was exactly in the position that he left it. It wasn't moved, it wasn't touched. And he said to himself, he said, you know, there must have been 200 people that saw this wallet. Not one person touched it. Not one person turned it around, because everybody there knows the halacha that the best thing to do for a while is to leave it where it is, as long as it's a makom shamur. Believe it or not, here's a public place which is a makom shamur. It was guarded. Now, without getting into the halachas of Eila Metzias, he said, to make a long story short, wow, I've never seen anything like this. I want to be part of a people that when something is not theirs, they simply don't touch it. It's the integrity is 100%. I want to be like one of these malachim. So comes Chazal and they say that how do you really do the mitzvah of Ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha? What's the question? The question is, how do you do your job in loving Hashem, get other people involved? How do you get other people involved? Don't approach them necessarily, unless you're so inclined. Don't talk to them necessarily about Yiddishkeit. Don't try to convince them of anything. Don't even try to get them to come to yeshiva. All those are good things, but you don't have to do that. Just be a real supermensch, a perfect person, a superb, wonderful human being, and people will be drawn to you. And then, misayiv ayodecha. On the other hand, let's say we would do something which is Shem Hashem Chas V'Sholom Misna'eh HaYodecha, the Gemara speaks about. That's a Chilul Hashem. People say, I don't want to have any part of this. Let me tell you, is everybody here familiar with the term to be bageled? You know that term?
Yeah.
It's a good term, right? So it happens. I don't know, maybe like, you know, I look very frum, so like it happens to me all the time. But, you know, you could be at a gas station, let's say, in Oklahoma, and you're pumping gas, and there's nobody, like, you know, no shuls around, right? You're just pumping gas in Oklahoma, and the guy, like, pumping gas on the other side will look at me, this happens to me all the time, and said, Gewalt, it's hot out today, you know, or oy vey, I have a headache. What's he doing? He wants to let me know that he's Jewish. So that's called, that concept, which happens everywhere you go, is called bageling, where you look like a Jew, and this guy does not look like a Jew, but he wants you to know that he's also a Jew, so he'll say, Shalom, or something like that. And that's called bageling. That's called bageling. It's an important term. Why do people do that? Think about it for a minute. Why do people do that? They do that because there's something intriguing about a Jew who keeps the Torah. Obviously, externally, looks like they keep the Torah. There's something intriguing about that person, and some part of him or her wants to be part of that, wants to connect. Simple. I mean, I'm not saying any great Kiddush. They want to connect. So how do they connect? How do they connect? Oy gevald, I'm tired. It's haste today. They'll come anything just to let you know, Baruch Hashem, just to let you know that they're Jewish and they're a brother, they want to connect with you. That if that happens, that means that you've developed a certain amount of chen and charisma and Torah beauty where people want to connect with you. as opposed to a case where people are not bageling you, but they're running the other way when they see you. I want to allow me to speak very much to the point. I think that here in Israel, and possibly in the whole Jewish world, and I don't want to say anything negative. I really don't want to say anything negative. I'm a very positive person. But I think, like, the biggest problem here in Eretz Yisrael, and probably in Judaism, is the same problem that was with the students of Rabbi Akiva, and the same problem with the students with the time of the second Bayis Sheni Chorban. Like, everybody hates each other. Not everybody. I mean, I don't hate you. You don't hate me, I hope. But it's basically, like, there's a culture of hate, and I think it's fueled by the media, and it's a sheker, but there's, like, you open up, you can have such aggravation, you know, you could open up a newspaper, and you could hear how terrible the settlers are, how terrible the Haredim are, how terrible the Chilonim are, it all depends which paper you open, whichever paper you open, they're hating everybody else. This is the nature of the media, and it's the nature of politics. And that's a lot of what's going on. You know, if there's an election, let's say, so okay, let the best man or woman win. You know, let there be, but no, not that simple. There has to be like a hate campaign and a smear campaign. This is a very, very terrible thing, because instead of the guy in the gas station now bageling me because I look like a Haredi, let's say, he's running the other way because he doesn't want to have anything to do with me because he hates me. And you don't even know me. Why do you hate me? So we have a problem here in Eretz Yisrael. There's a problem. I think this is real. I mean, are you think I'm being too negative? What do you think? It's pretty real. It's pretty real. I'm not saying everywhere. There's some exceptions to the rule. There's people that walk around in Tel Aviv hugging everybody. I don't recommend that either, necessarily. But just like, it's a problem which, I'll tell you what this problem is doing. What this problem is doing is, you know, first of all, like the Kirov movement. I mean, forget about it. I mean, who wants to be from if we hate from Jews? You know, if the media's got a campaign against it. So the on a deeper level, on a more important level, the Shechina, where's the Shechina? You can't have a Shechina where there's division. You can't have the Geula. You can't have the Mashiach. You can't have peace. You can't have peace in the Middle East, you can't have peace in the world if there's hate. So, here we have a challenge, a very, very real challenge of Malchus. I'm just giving one example, which I think is a real one, of how to achieve Malchus, how to be little Malachim here and do something for the Malchus of Hashem. And that is to create Ahava between people. And how do we create Ahava between people? It's just such an important thing. I'm not talking about, let me be clear here, because I'm not talking about Achdus. I don't care about Achdus. Achdus means that we're all united, we're all one, we all believe the same way. That's Narishkeit. I'm not talking about even agreeing with somebody else. I'm talking about just not hating them. Not hating them. Not to hate, not to be hated. What can we do that there should, to eliminate the biggest problem that exists in Eretz Yisrael today? What can we do? So the answer is, A, whenever we see anything that's divisive, we have to protest. I tell you something, a couple years ago I decided that, you know, if somebody tells me, you know, sometimes people tell a racist joke. You know, they're pretty funny. You know, they tell a joke about, you know, was it Polish people or black people or Jews. Those are actually the funniest. So, you know, you're polite, haha, nice, good joke. Maybe you tell it over to somebody else. I decided a couple years ago, somebody tells me a racist joke, no matter how hard it is, I'm not going to laugh. Now, people get very upset with me. Don't you get it? I'll tell it to you again. What are you, Polish? They give me this kind of, you know, this is a job of a Jew, Atem Edai, to make sure that unfair division, or for that matter any division, but certainly unfair division, doesn't take place. Because what have we suffered from the most in history, the Jewish people, if not from this type of racism? This is why there was a Holocaust because of racism. There was pogroms because of racism. That's why there's blood libels because of racism. Now we're laughing at a racist joke? It's wrong. And not only is it wrong, I'm not talking about wrong and right. I'm talking about that we have a function. We can achieve greatness here. Because in that one moment of not laughing, we are giving a statement, no, this is not the right thing. And I'll tell you, we ourselves, forget about laughing at somebody else's jokes, you know, we ourselves have these, all of us, we have these stereotypes in our mind. And we paint everybody from a certain, well, take, pick your Jew. Haredim, settlers, datilumi, kipasrugash, drymals, breslovers, burkas, whatever. Pick your kind of a Jew. We say, oh, they're all a bunch of, you know, and we give them a name. First of all, 100% usher, 100% multishem, but not becoming of us. Because if we who are part of the Malchus Hashem, we're taking together Chesed and Gevurah and Tiferes and Netzach, Hoyd, and we're trying to bring it all down to earth with Malchus, then we have to be the type that Shem Shemayim is Misahev Al Yodenu. People come to us, they see us, they have an encounter with us. Can I tell just a great story happened to me a couple weeks ago? I'm involved a little bit in publishing and printing. I just love Sfarim, so I publish Sfarim. That's what I help people publish Sfarim. So I had to go to a printer in Cologne. So this printer, Cologne is, you know, this printer, everybody in Cologne is like a bunch of nuts in Cologne. I went to this printer in Cologne. And in Cologne, I come into this print shop, and there's nobody from there. Like sometimes, you know, you have this kind of person, that kind of, like completely Chiloni place, this particular place. Maybe there's 60, 70 employees with big machines printing. They do the only ones that do this kind of color separation that I needed to do. So when I came, I had an appointment to work on something with the printer. And he said, they're not ready for another hour and 15 minutes. So I said, an hour and 15 minutes? I just drove from Beit Shemesh, and I don't have an hour and 15 minutes extra, and here I am in Cologne, and what am I supposed to do in Cologne for the next hour and 15 minutes? It's not right. You told me to come. If you know it's going to be an hour and 15 minutes late, you should have called me and told me to come later. So the fellow felt bad. This is the owner of the print shop. So he felt bad. He says to me, I think sarcastically, he said, look, you don't have to waste the hour over here. You know, ten shiur, you know. Give us a shear. You're right. So what kind of a shear? So he says, give us a shear. I'll gather some people together and give us a shear for an hour. We don't want to waste your time, and we won't waste our time. It'll be a beautiful thing. We never get to hear a shear. True story. So I said, okay, I'll give a shear. Figure I'll go into his. He brings me into his office, and I'm sitting there, and he has a secretary calling around. Within 5 minutes, I think there was maybe 23 or 24 people in the room, men, women, old people, young people. With tissues on their head, you know, instead of a yarmulke, some without a yarmulke, all kinds of people are sitting there. And okay, tain shiur. So, like an amazing thing. What do they want? So I gave a shiur, and the shiur, I said the owner of the place said, ani kohen. He says to me, I'm a kohen. So I said, what do you want me to talk about? He said, ani kohen. So speak about being a Kohen. Everyone should understand, they should listen to me because I'm a Kohen. So I started to speak about Kohen. I spoke about Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, the Birchas Kohuna. I spoke about Kot Tavaruch Hu B'nai Yisrael. One day I'll have the schus, I'll tell you the shir that I said. Siyata D'shmaya, like, came to my mind. The perfect shir for these people. They listened for 40 minutes, 45 minutes. They asked questions. They got involved. It was just such a beautiful thing, and at the end of the whole thing, I actually went over time, the printing thing was ready, and I got a call the next day asking if I could come back. The people want me to come back once a week and give a shiur. Amazing. Do it, I think. But it's just, what am I saying? Why am I telling this story? Because these barriers are so easily broken. I walked into this place, I'm sure everybody's like, whoa. You know, there's, look at those guys here. And I was like, whoa. You know, they're this and I'm that. And what are you doing? Why are you wasting my time? By the end of an hour, we were all friends. And being that we were all friends, I hope, Bezrat Hashem, Shem Shemayim was mitahev al yadi. I think so. I think that we brought a bigger Avas Hashem into this world. They heard a little bit of Torah. More important than the Torah, they saw that I'm a nice guy. You could talk to me. And I saw that they're nice people. And a chibur took place. Let's say that would take place 100 times a day in 100 places. You wouldn't need a Kirov movement. You wouldn't need a Balshuva movement. You wouldn't need even organizations to make peace between people. There would be Shem Shemayim. This would be a place that would be wonderful. Everybody would be bageling each other. How do I get in? Everybody would be singing with each other. Let's harmonize. And it's all about this one point of Malchus and getting out there that I respect you. Doesn't mean I agree with you, and it doesn't mean I want to be like you, but I respect you, and you respect me. So I think that's like a real example, but I mean it like very, very practical. I think that here in the Sfiras HaOmer, as every time we come to Malchus, and then finally to Malchus Sheba Malchus, at the end, by Shavuos time, Shavuos is all about Malchus Sheba Malchus. It's all about trying to figure out what we can do in the mitzvah of Yahavta Es Hashem. And you need all of those spheres. You need to have a lot of chesed. You need to have a lot of gevurah. You need a lot of all these midos you need in order to accomplish, to be these ramchals malachim in this world with the free choice. Because if there wouldn't be free choice, then it wouldn't be malchus. Do you understand this point? If there wouldn't be free choice, there wouldn't be malchus. Why not?
Because
they were like malachim. And if we didn't choose to do good, then we're not really good. If we didn't choose to do good, we just have to do it. We were programmed that way. But if we choose to do good, we're the best. And I think that's the my synopsis of the spheros. Can I answer any questions? This is... Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for asking. I have a book on Nevuah. I have a book on Pirkei Avos. And I'm putting out a book on history right now, with the history of every Tana, and how he fits into me and Rav Citrin. We're going to write a book together about how every Tana matches his Maimra in Shas, and can get them all online. I can't think of a better question, I have to tell you.
What is the first choice of people putting the sphere to the different sphere?
The first source, very good, is actually... the Ramak says it, Rav Moshe Cordovero, who was the Rebbe of the Arizal, and he says, this is his language, Kabbalah hi biyadi, it's a Kabbalah in his hands from Rav Nechunya ben Akona. Rav Nechunya ben Akona, who wrote the Anna B'choach, Tzfila, which if you'll examine that after Sfira, the Anna B'choach is the most magnificent Tzfila written by Rav Nechunya ben Akona, together with Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, like Gevald. It's a beautiful sefer, by the way, on a Bechoach, just on Anna Bechoach by the Chalban. Just beautiful how he analyzes every word of it. But that's the Makar. The Makar is the Ramak in the name of Rav Nechunya ben Akona. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it. It's a water here. That's why you know you live in a club.